Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP Podcast. I'm Jorge Martin, and today, vámonos a donde está muy caliente, where it's really caliente. We're going to the desert, el desierto, in our Beat Writer series. And we're going with el buen señor Jess Root. And you'll know very much why he is el señor. He's the site manager for CardsWire, and he's also the host for the podcast Rise Up, See Red. He's also a dual threat, being an insider for the Cardinals, and he's also a Spanish teacher for more than 20 years. So if any Spanglish, any more Spanglish than usual escapes and nos escapa, you're going to know why. So he's got not just one, but 2 degrees from ASU. So having worked with Andre Ether for a while there, I know the pitchfork sign. So if he does it twice, you'll know why. So Jess, gracias for joining us on the Familia FFP podcast. Welcome. Bienvenidos, my friend.
Es un placer. If you hear me in my Spanish, you're going to hear se me va a escapar un acento argentino con un vocabulario mexicano después de vivir after 20 years of teaching Spanish here in Arizona. I've lived here my entire life, so the words that I hear are mostly Mexicano, but on the accent that comes out is Argentino. That's where I learned it.
And I will say, whenever I've talked to someone from Argentina, their Spanish is probably among the fastest I've ever heard in my life. I mean, just I really, really have to sit and listen to it. I think the Argentine and the Venezuelans speak just
Venezuelans, like, and they talk, you know. It's not just fast, they just don't stop talking. They talk so much.
it is amazing. It is amazing. Yeah, and it just says como una ametralladora. I mean, it's boom, 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 and I was just like, wow. It's just my senses are just finished. And actually, having worked in baseball for a while, I worked with a lot of Dominicanos, and also very fast Spanish. But one of the things I found is that they don't finish their sentences all the time. It's just like a lot is implied, kind of like the southern region of España. So the Andalusia region, there's a lot of, they don't like to finish their sentences either. So, but Jess, I mean, it's awesome to have you. You know, you started off the CardsWire site back in 2016. And so, I mean, you've seen some of the crazy ones. I mean, I saw the story you wrote about how Dane Brugler rated their 2018 draft as one of the worst. So you had to do that. But obviously things have picked up since then. And that's one thing, you know, there's a couple of good drafts. Obviously that the draft that brought Kyler Murray to the team is really starting to pay dividends, starting with numero uno. He was lighting the NFL on fire last year. You know, he was at 619 rushing yards through week 11. Over almost 2,700 yards at that point, passing and 19 TDs. I mean, he was just lighting the world on fire from fantasy aspect. He was the number one quarterback at that time. He hurt his shoulder at that time. Where did you see kind of like the offense really just kind of slow down as he slowed down?
Well, what ended up happening last year is this, and he actually talked about it this last week during minicamp, is ideally for him, what made the offense special last year was his legs. Their rushing attack the last 2 years has been really good, but what made it really good was when Murray was able to get out and make plays with his legs. After his shoulder injury, he wasn't as willing to run. And that's where sort of the offense stagnated, because the running back running game was not as effective, and the passing game wasn't as good either as a result, because it seemed like for much of the season, especially that middle section of the year, when a play needed to be made, it was Kyler. And he put it this way, is that my legs should be a luxury, not a necessity. And after the shoulder injury, he made a conscious decision to put himself less in harm's way. His shoulder injury wasn't bad, but it was enough for him to be concerned about. And I think that affected not only his decisions, but it also affected Cliff Kingsbury's play calling. Things changed on how he approached the offense after that. And entering this year is going to be interesting to see, because it really, last year, he unlocked the running part of his game. I felt like his rookie season, it was almost as if he was purposely not running. Like, it was like he was making a conscious effort not to run. And I thought that that rookie year would have been better off had he unlocked that a little bit more. But he's always been a pass first guy. And then, like, he's a quarterback, so he wants to make plays with his arm. And when they unlocked that, his second year was really how things were special offensively. But in the passing game, it turned out that last year was just a whole bunch of DeAndre Hopkins and Chase Edmonds, and they weren't getting many plays from anyone else. They got better play from the offensive line. Kenyon Drake in the running game was steady, but not dynamic like he was in the second half of 2019. But this year's going to be interesting because, well, one, they upgraded the middle of the offensive line, upgrading from Mason Cole at center to Rodney Hudson, one of the best in the game, if not the best center in the game. And say what you will about his production the last couple of years, but pairing A.J. Green with DeAndre Hopkins, I think, is going to have a trickle-down effect, because Hopkins is a clear number one. Green doesn't have to be a number one anymore. He's going to be their number two, and that's going to slide Christian Kirk to Christian Kirk, when he came out of the draft in 2018, everyone said that he was a slot guy. And the Cardinals said, no, he can make plays on the outside, and he's done that some. But now he's going to be primarily in the slot, where is probably his natural position. And so it's going to – Green doesn't have to be at all pro that he was. And I don't think he's – and according to Steve Keim, their general manager, he still shows enough on tape that he can be great. Is he going to put up hop numbers? No, but as a number two, I think it's very reasonable to see him get 60 to 70 pass catches this year and, 800 to 1,000 yards in a secondary role where he's no longer the focal point of defenses, which will allow, if they're going to double hop, guess what? AJ Green in one-on-one coverage is going to look much better. And ideally the quarterback play is going to be much better for him. I think he said it a couple of times. I think 36 of the 100 and some odd targets that AJ had last year were uncatchable throws.
Oh, well, and that's going to come out. That's going to be so much on Murray. And so with Murray, one other question. You wrote an article talking about his proficiency on the three-step drop, how he was the top quarterback in there, and in that particular throw, him and Big Ben was right behind him. You also mentioned where he needed to improve, and also improvement not only in throwing other throws, but also kind of how do you see the run pass mix with Murray happening this year?
Well, I think, like, you look at his passing production, you'd say he wasn't a prolific passer, but he should have been a 4,000. He was real close to being a 4,000 yard passer each of these last 2 years. Had he not gotten hurt in the finale, almost certainly he would have cracked 4,000 yards. And he's already got, I think, two of the top 10 passing yard seasons in Cardinals history. Now, that does, part of that's because their quarterback history is pretty bad. And the NFL is in, like, a 4,000 yard season is almost a baseline for decent quarterbacks now, almost.
Right.
But I think, the pace that they want to play with, it can be pretty balanced. It can be pretty balanced because, well, I know part of that is Murray's legs make pass plays into run plays at times. But I don't think the balance will change as much. Only it feels like this year they might lean more into that four wide set. They already were our number one in 10 personnel. But they might lean into that even a little bit more this year, with an upgraded offensive line. They didn't really do anything at tight end. And now I think they really like the four. You're going to have Hop, you're going to get Green, you're going to have Christian Kirk. And then your number four could be Rondale Moore, who they just drafted. Now, you know, Andy Isabella had that. Well, last year it was Fitz. And then so you had Hopkins, Kirk, Fitz in the on the, in the slot. And then the fourth guy that would come in would be Andy Isabella at times. And Isabella hasn't been what they'd hoped he would be. I think they still believe he can be. I think Rondale Moore is already what they want Isabella to be in terms of a slot guy. They projected Isabella as a slot receiver. He didn't really play slot in college at UMass. Moore is already proficient at it. And not only does he has top end speed, he runs angry. Like he's not a, he runs with an intent to score when he gets the ball. And so I think the slot play, since it doesn't look like Larry Fitzgerald is coming back, I've felt for months he probably isn't coming back. Otherwise, he'd have been back. Right. So now, instead of just a possession guy in the slot, you're going to have Kirk and Moore, who are both better in space than Fitz was the last couple of years. And so you're going to have the potential for some more dynamic play. And now, in terms of how run pass, I don't think the balance will change much, because that, I mean, that balance is often determined by the outcome of a game. And the Cardinals are a team where if they're winning, they will run the ball. And they did that last year. Kenyon Drake was a great fourth quarter runner, and it was, and they used him to close out games a lot. And I think that's kind of what they envisioned this year with Chase Edmonds and James Conner.
So, and how do you see that split kind of happening? Is it going to be where Edmonds is kind of like that receiving back with occasional running, and then Connor more of the banger? Or how do you, because it really is those two are the clear cut runners for
that
team.
Is one of the things to see how that goes, because one thing we might say, like, you could keep Edmonds in the role that he had, and you just slide Connor into the Drake role. However, Edmonds knows that he's been given an opportunity. And I think the organization and has said for the last 2 years, they view him as a starting running back. They view him as an every down guy. And so I think he's going to have the opportunity to do that. I believe at least early on, it will be the Chase Edmonds show, with Connor coming in to spell him and to also for more obvious short yardage, goal line, and grinding out the clock type thing. And I think Edmonds will get the bulk early. How that goes, I think, will evolve. If he, you know, if he shows the one thing that's kind of the knock on him is, well, size wise. And I look at it, he's the same size as a lot of running backs in the league. And it's just, he was banged up his last year of college. He got hurt the game after in 2019 when he had his 26 carries. So he got hurt the game after that. And then last year when he had his 20 plus carry game against the Dolphins, he was a little dinged up after that. And so there's a little worry with his size, the durability with the heavier workload. He'll refute that. He understands that. So I think it's going to be the Chase Edmonds game early on. And I think he'll have more of a David Johnson type role when he was first there, where I think he'll be the bell cow mostly. The case is what we've seen from Cliff Kingsbury historically. He likes to have multiple running backs, but how he uses running backs is usually pretty exclusive. And I think that was an exception for Edmonds, because he played himself into playing time. Even in 2019, they basically went from David Johnson to Kenyon Drake getting all the touches. Last year, Edmonds proved himself the year before and in training camp. And so even though Kingsbury would have had Kenyon more as a every down back and would have used him more in the running and passing game, Edmonds was that good in practice. Edmonds did enough things that he had to play him. And so because Edmonds offers that extra versatility in the passing game, I think you're going to see him get the bulk of the touches, whether in the run game or the pass game. And honestly, I would really like to see more of the two back, not necessarily like two in the backfield, but to incorporate both. So it then becomes more, not 10 personnel, but 20 personnel. So you go with a three wide and two back, where you have Edmonds start in the backfield or line up wide or motion out. And so you could use Connor in the backfield and you still have Edmonds in the slot or as a receiver. You could incorporate them both that way. I think that's going to create a lot of mismatches. And you don't know what to do because, one, do you key in on the run game? And if you put him up, so it's different. This is what Bruce Arians said. I'm kind of rambling on this, but a couple of years ago, Bruce Arians said the way he handled David Johnson is he did, okay, Larry Fitzgerald's on one side. I'm going to put David Johnson on the other side of the field. Figure it out, defense, so they're not clogged up. And he goes, figure it out. Now, you've already got that this year with Hopkins and Green, but then you add it doesn't matter where you have Chase because he showed last year, he's really dynamic. I mean, he was arguably the most dynamic, like outside of Kyler Murray. Now Hopkins was great, but in terms of dynamics, when the ball was in his hand, Chase Edmonds might've been the most dynamic player with the ball in his hands after Kyler Murray last year.
Well, that's good to hear because I have him on a team that's on a dynasty team that's going to be
the thing is going to be hard this year in terms of fantasy is Kyler Murray around the goal line makes it hard to count on a running like to have him as to count him for lots of touchdowns, and then the addition of James Conner, who's your bigger between the tackles guy for short yardage. And so is Edmonds going to have a big touchdown year like we saw from David Johnson or even Kenyon Drake even last year? You might not get as much touchdown production as you want simply because they'll have other options and, you know, having a running quarterback because Kyler was used a ton around the goal line as well.
He did. And yeah, there were times where he just looked like, I mean, he was on a different speed when he was down near the goal line. So
I would hate to, like, there were players in position to make the tackle. And he just went, yup. And
that's incredible. Well, I was going to get into I had the receiver set up for this point, but I feel like we already covered that group unless there's any, I mean, as you mentioned, it's going to be Hopkins and Green with possibly Moore and Kirk. Kind of mixing in. I mean, there's not any. I don't think there's any room for any sleepers out of there. And actually, not a lot of room for the tight ends to get any production.
Don't worry about the tight ends. One, they don't use like they're used in the running game. Two, like when people were talking about Dan Arnold last year as being a sleeper guy to now, he did have a couple of nice games against the Rams. Mm-hmm. But people were talking about him putting up big numbers. As exciting as Dan Arnold was as a pass catcher, as with speed and length and ball skills, the logistics said there just won't be enough balls thrown his way. And I said, if he gets 35 catches, that's about the max he could possibly get. He ended up with 31 and I think 5 or 6 touchdowns. And that's about the max. I think that's about the max production you're going to get out of a tight end in this offense. Max Williams, well, one, he's got to stay healthy. Last year was really rough, but he came out of college as you know, who could have been a nice receiving threat, but he'll be good for about 20 catches if he's healthy all year. They literally have no one else on the roster that you can count on. Like Darrell Daniels, if anyone's heard of Darrell Daniels outside of Arizona, I'm proud of you because I don't know why you would. And then they've got a bunch of guys. Now, they just signed a guy named Ross Travis. I had never heard of him. He started some in the NFL. And then a bunch of guys. Ian Bunting. Probably no one's heard of him. They've got a German, an Austrian dude, Bernhard Zeigowitz, who's on the, but he probably won't make the roster. He's in through the NFL player pathway program. A couple of undrafted guys, Kerry Angeline out of NC State, Bruno Labelle, I think was Cincinnati, comes out of Canada. But the Cardinals just aren't going to use the pass, the tight ends, except sparingly in the passing game. You'll see something in a surprise. There's a pass to the tight end, and it'll be a big play. But if you can't count on even someone who plays a lot like Max Williams, you can't count on him getting more than 15 to 20 catches a year.
So, you know, one of the things I'd like to ask about is the offensive line with everybody. And the team has definitely made some upgrades. I believe they finished the season, I think it was number 12, according to PFF grades. And how different is it to be blocking as a unit when you've got a mobile quarterback like Murray, and how effective were these guys, and can they improve?
Well, their tackle play was fantastic last year. DJ Humphreys was great. He probably should have been a Pro Bowler, but it's really hard to be an NFC Pro Bowler when you've got Trent Williams and David Bakhtiari in the same conference as you, who have been playing at that level for years. And were they better? Was DJ better than either of those two guys last year? Probably not. But he played at a Pro Bowl level. Kelvin Beachum on the right side was fantastic. Steady. They got inconsistent play from the interior. And I think that's where sometimes Murray would get a little bit worried about the pressure up the middle. Justin Pugh's been solid. Mason Cole was very inconsistent last year, and J.R. Sweezy was not good last year, and they ended up benching him in favor of Justin Murray. So there's a clear upgrade. At center, you've got one of the best in the game in Rodney Hudson, both in pass pro as a run block. Like, he is great. As long as he stays healthy. He's got no durability problems, but as long as he stays healthy, that is going to anchor that line. So now you've got you've got good to great play at three different positions. You get an average to above average player in Justin Pugh at left guard. And now the right guard position, we don't know exactly what they've got about. So they added Brian Winters, not that he's anything special. He started a ton in the league. He's the one thing that he has a tough mentality, but he's not great. He's a serviceable guard in this league. Veteran Justin Murray, who started, I think, 7 games last year at guard and 12 games at right tackle in 2019. He's adequate. The team is comfortable with him. I wouldn't call him necessarily good. You're going to get at best average play from him. Josh Jones, their third round pick last year, is going to be in the mix this year at guard somehow. Left tackle for 4 years at Houston. He worked at right tackle all last year in practice and this offseason. And I think in part it's a push to try and get him to play, because he's not going to play. He's not going to start at either tackle spot. The potential is, hey, how can we potentially get him in the lineup? And so he's going to be in the mix at right guard. I think if the organization, if things went right, he would be the guy to win the job. And then you've got Max Barcia, who is a starter at guard in Denver and has been on the bench the last 2 seasons. No Sean Coogler, the offensive line coach, but he's steady. He can play both. He can play all 3 interior positions. So you get great play from 3 spots, and then you get adequate to above average play from your guard positions. And what you're going to have is, I think the run game will then become dynamic, especially when you have the big playability of Chase Edmonds, the tough running from James Conner. You've really covered ever. So they've got someone who can make plays inside and out in Edmonds. You've got Conner, who's a bigger back in Conner. And then you add Kyler Murray's legs. And then you upgraded the receiving core, which should allow Murray to make more plays with his arms. This offense, let's be honest, it should be a top, I'm not saying number one offense, it should be a top 5 offense in yards and points this year. If the plan comes together, on paper, it looks fantastic, and it should be. This should be a top 5 team in scoring and in terms of yards and scoring this year across the board, because, you know, Murray should be better. The running back position is at least as good as it was last year. The offensive line is unquestionably better than it was last year. The receiving core is unquestionably better in talent than it was last year. And the tight ends are the tight ends. And so they were already trending as a top offensive team. They were humming on offense for a good portion of the year. So if everything goes the way it's supposed to be, barring a major injury, this is an offense that's going to be, that should be pretty unstoppable.
I know people in fantasy are definitely looking forward to it so much. I always like to ask a question about the defense overall. The last few years, the Cardinals are a defense that people have targeted, especially in the passing game. But it seems like some of the moves, I mean, obviously there was so much of the draft was dedicated to the defensive side of the ball, multiple players in the secondary, Zaven Collins also, you had Isaiah Simmons the year before, Malcolm Butler comes in. You have Vance Joseph, who has a great reputation as a defensive coordinator. And let's not forget a future Hall of Famer, J.J. Watt, and Chandler Jones is also one of the best pass rushers when he's healthy. Using the caveat, if everyone stays healthy, could this be a defense that takes a big step up?
It really could. Now they took a big step last year because in 2019 their defense was bad, especially the pass defense.
Muy malo.
The pass defense in 2019 was atrocious, historically bad. Now, one of the numbers, it's not the end all be all, but their opposing quarterback rating was over 109 in 2019. Passer rating, 109. Essentially, they made every quarterback on average look like a Hall of Famer or have a career year over the course of the season. They gave, I think, 30 touchdown passes. They gave up one of second to last in almost every passing category in 2019. And in fairness, they were missing their top. So they lost Patrick Peterson for the first six games of the year. They didn't have Robert Alford, who was going to be their number two, and then who's supposed to be their number one while Patrick was out. And so you were left starting. These are your starting cornerbacks, Tremaine Brock and Byron Murphy, who was a rookie. Add to that, they were playing Hassan Reddick at inside linebacker still. I would say what you want about the Hassan Reddick experiment. Literally everyone in the NFL pegged him to play off the ball. Okay? So it wasn't like the Cardinals put him in the wrong spot. Everyone would have put him in the wrong spot because of his size at 6'1", 235. It's not the size of a guy who's going to survive on the edge. When he moved to the edge, he was great last year. And we'll see what happens with Carolina on a full-time basis. Their defense was put together poorly in 2019 because of personnel and circumstances. Last year, even though the defense wasn't great, you look at the passing numbers. I think they were, I don't remember off the top of my head, but they were in top 10 in pass defense for most of the year, if not finishing there. And where they did well against the deep pass. They didn't have, they had adequate corner play. Patrick Peterson last year wasn't great. He had great moments, but his bad was bad. Drake Kirkpatrick was at best adequate, but schematically their defensive backfield in terms of the past, they were good last year. But they did kind of get picked apart in the short passing game. Running backs in particular in the passing game beat them. They were not nearly as bad as in years past against tight ends, but they were vulnerable in the middle of the field, which leads us to this year. So their defensive line last year, only one player didn't end up on injured reserve. One. So pretty much everyone they counted on to do something got hurt last year. Chandler Jones was lost for most of the season. Hassan Reddick was great. Devon Kennard as well missed some time and had his job basically taken by Marcus Golden. Jordan Hicks, he was great in 2019. He was at best adequate. He looked slow. And so we look at what they did this year defensively. So they have their defensive line healthy. They added J.J. Watt, so you can't say that they're not better. J.J. Watt makes that group better. So they brought back Marcus Golden. Chandler Jones comes back, so the edge presence should be better. And you're going to even likely add Watt to the edge on passing downs. They now have Isaiah Simmons and Zaven Collis slated to play every down in the middle of the defense. And better might not necessarily be the case, but definitely more athletic. Very athletic. Very long, very athletic, can make plays. And at safety, you still have an all-pro in Buda Baker. Jalen Thompson missed most of last year that they really like. And then at corner, I don't think they got worse. I don't think Malcolm Butler's any worse than Patrick Peterson and probably a slight upgrade overall. I think his floor is much higher than what Pat's was last year, even if his ceiling isn't as high as Pat on a good day. I think Byron Murphy is going to be really good this year. He's going to primarily play in the slot, but I think he might be their best corner coming into this year. They added, Robert Alford's back, Darquez Dennard. They drafted a couple of cornerbacks. So I don't think they stepped back. So their defensive line is better. Their inside backers are more athletic. Their edge is better because Jones comes back. And then the secondary, I think, is a wash at least. If they're healthy, I don't expect them to be like 1985 Bears or 2000 Ravens or anything like that. But it's a unit that could be a top 10 unit. This is a team, even though it's not logical to, in the offseason, pick them over any of the NFC West teams based on what we know about the NFC West. I mean, the Rams, who were great last year, got better at quarterback. I think they're the favorite. Seattle, you can't ever count them out because of Russell Wilson. San Francisco was just a year removed from the Super Bowl and suffered basically every injury you could think of. And then you've got the Cardinals. But if the Cardinals have everything go, like, if everything goes as planned, that's going to be a fantastic team if it all comes together. That's a team that might, like, everything goes well, shouldn't have any weaknesses, ideally.
Oh, man, you got me fired up. I mean, as someone who grew up watching the NFC West, I mean, I it's clearly that's the best division in the NFL. And it,
top
I think
to
it's
bottom,
just gonna be,
clearly. Yeah.
Back half of the season, it's just going to be dogfights every week. It's going to be so much fun. Well, Senor Jess, I have one more question. It's a fun one. You live in Arizona, as you mentioned. And so I've spent a few spring trainings there. I've had my fair share of good food out there. I always ask, what are your favorite tacos? Your favorite taco fillings? And if there's any place you want to give a shout out, feel free.
I like almost anything on tacos. There's no bad taco.
Muy bien, muy bien.
There's no such thing as a bad taco.
Me encanta.
Do
you have a top three?
Honestly, I like everything. That's the thing. I'm not picky at all. So you can get more authentic. Lengua tacos are fantastic. But there's actually a place out here on the east side in Gilbert. It's not super Mexican, but it's a taco place. It's called Rusty Tacos out here in Gilbert. And they have all sorts. So you can get shrimp, you can get fish. One of my favorites called the Downtown, and they use a fried chicken tenders with honey and chipotle and honey sriracha. And it's great. I mean, they have like 15 different tacos on the menu. I go and I get like four different types of tacos because I can't pick just one. and my wife likes it too. She's much more picky than I am. And so honestly, like here at home, I will make a traditional ground beef taco. I'll use tilapia for fish tacos. I'll do some chicken as well. Technically it's not birria because it's not goat, but there you say beef birria. I made myself some once as well. Machaca. You know what? sign me up for all the tacos.
Oh, muy bien.
Sign me up for the all the tacos. Here's the thing. I don't like, I will say, even though we go to like Del Taco and Taco Bell, give me a traditional corn tortilla, like a street taco, instead of the shells. And you can almost put anything on it and I'll eat it. And I don't think it's good.
Yeah. It's gotta be it's gotta be the soft corn tortilla, you know?
Yes.
No hard shells. No. Well, the only way the hard shell is if it's dorado, if it's kind of deep fried, which is,
right. But it starts, it's not those store-bought shell type things. It's not the crunchy shells. It's corn tortilla that turned into something you fried hard.
Yes. Exactly. Oh man, you got me hungry. I'm glad.
It's past lunchtime. It's early dinner. Taco snack time.
Well, I had breakfast a little late, so I'm having lunch after this. So it's perfect timing. So, mi buen amigo, Señor Jess, thank you so much. Everybody, eso es todo for our show. Thanks again to Anchor for being our hosting network and making sure Independent Podcast gets out to the Familia community. Also, thanks to YouTube for letting us to see Jess's face and to be able to interact this way across several hundred miles. Please make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube, and also find our original content at familiaffb.com. Jess, where can they find you?
Easiest place is our Cardinals content at cardswire.com. On Twitter, I'm Señor Jess Root. Obviously, it's not with the tilde. It's just a regular N, Señor Jess Root. And then you can find the podcast Rise Up C-Red if you like listening to Arizona Cardinals content, or even sometimes you can find that anywhere where podcasts are distributed.
Well, I know the fantasy footballers down in Phoenix should be listening to you because they're huge Cardinal fans. So everybody, you can find me at Jorge Martin 17. You can also find our Instagram at Familia FFB, and don't forget our Familia FFB Facebook page. Otra vez, Jess, gracias so much. And everybody remember, todos somos familia.